Philip, you are walking down to Patterson's office. He has just rung you up at your desk and asked you to please see him in his office. And you are, I think at this point, probably going to go because that's probably the best thing to do for you.
Yes. If you say so, but I really don't believe that, I really disagree with the decision, if I may say so myself. I mean, for all I know, he was the one who went through my desk, and when he going through my desk, and he found the letter that I was to send to, we'll step into the office then. It's a fine suggestion. I don't agree with it, but it's...
Give him a piece of your mind. Here's an opportunity to tell him what you really feel.
Yes, but sometimes the pieces need to be kept in place and glued back together to make a whole mind. Or vase. Or perhaps both.
Do you knock or do you just walk in?
I knock.
You will hear Patterson on the other side say, come in.
And Philip will enter.
As you enter, you will see the office. It's a nice office. It's got a lot of law books on bookshelves on both sides. There's his desk with a big chair that he's sitting in and lots of stuff on his desk and two chairs in front of the desk. And he indicates for you to take a seat.
So Philip will ensure the door is closed behind him. He'll look around the room, his eyes hidden behind his dark glasses again. He will sit in the left-hand chair. And he will take his valise, and he will keep it in his lap.
Okay. And since you said you are looking around the room, as you sit down, Philip, you see on Patterson's desk, normal office supplies, a phone, but you see some familiar journals. You also see a stack of envelopes with a very familiar handwriting on them. Looks like they're postaged, ready to go somewhere.
Wait a moment.
But you also notice a tea set. And Patterson says, hello, Philip. Would you like some tea?
He hesitates because he sees the journals. He sees the letters. And now he's questioning whether or not he actually sent those letters and they were returned or not. Yes, Agent Patterson, I think I would very much like a cup of tea.
He's not an Englishman, so forgive him as he clumsily pours the tea, drops in way too much sugar, and hands you a cup. No saucer, just a cup.
Thank you. I shall treasure it always.
He'll fix one for himself and he'll lean back in his chair and begin to sip his tea, and he'll just look at you. His expression is a bit, you know, furrowed brow, a little squinty-eyed, and really taking you in.
So Philip has his dark glasses on, and his head is pointed in Patterson's direction. His eyes aren't anywhere near Agent Patterson. He's studying the desk. He's looking at the journals. He's looking at the letters. He's looking at the letters. He can't stop looking at the letters. He knows. I know I sent those letters. He was in Jerusalem. Or was it Baghdad? Or was it Damascus? Or was it Marrakesh? Or was it Morocco? I sent those letters. I know I sent those letters. Was in St. Petersburg. Why would he be in St. Petersburg? Why did I say he was in St. Petersburg? He was never in St. Petersburg. Unless there was that time he was in St. Petersburg.
Philip, is the room too bright? See, you haven't removed your glasses yet.
St. Petersburg. Yes. I think he was in there once. Are there any pictures on the wall?
No. There is a picture on his desk of his lovely wife, but that is a photo, not a painting.
All right. Philip will slowly take his mug of tea, because let's face it, he's American. This is a mug. This is a coffee mug full of tea.
You caught me.
And it's like that newfangled American tea they make down in Georgia or something. He's going to put that on the desk with a shaky hand, like it's noticeably shaky. And then he will reach up and take off his glasses. And sure, his face is pale. It's very clear that he's had an experience, and that experience has deeply affected him. Because when he thinks about anything other than Cairo, he's fine. But once he thinks about Egypt, he gets that flashback to a tomb and a mummy and bloodied scratch marks in a heavy stone door. And those fingers piercing his chest. And as he takes the glasses off, he'll put them in a breast pocket and he'll noticeably run his thumb down the center of his button-down shirt to make sure it's still there before taking that mug of tea back into his hands.
Philip, as you do all of this, Patterson still has his eyes on you. He's still taking you in. His face, a look of concern. He'll give you a warm smile.
I don't trust it.
So, Philip, how are you doing? And he'll tap a folder in front of him. I have Dr. Kruger's notes here, but I just want to know, how are you?
Well, Agent Patterson, I believe I must have taken a fall or something in Dunwich. It was a terrible place even before we got to the house, but it seems to have affected my constitution rather severely. Even so, I don't really believe I remember anything aside from sitting in a dining room. And given the decrepit nature of the home, I would not be surprised if the chair I was in gave way and I took a hit to my head. I haven't yet attended the doctor, so to speak.
Yes, Dunwich, I guess we'll have to get down to it then. You and your fellow agents.
I wouldn't call them fellows.
You and your fellow agents went to Dunwich to investigate a residential property. Can you tell me what happened when you arrived, as much as you can remember?
Philip will take a sip of this terrible Lipton tea. It's like somebody left it out in the sun for 2 days. Dunwich. We drove in, and the sun was coming down. We were met by the owner, a very jovial religious fellow who claimed that he had found a spiritual experience living in this this decrepit old demesne. He was originally from the south. I believe he said it was from Georgia, perhaps Atlanta. And he still harbors some grudge, ancestral grudge, regarding what he would call the War of Northern Aggression. That is neither here nor there. But he said he wished to sell the home because it was a home of miracles. He stayed in the home after his family had passed and passed the home to him. And there he had a religious experience, quote unquote, that shook him to his very core. And when he awoke in the morning, he was a new man with a new destiny in front of him. And he wished to sell the house at a tip-top premium for the owners to be able to stay in it and have their own spiritual awakenings, so to speak. He let us inside. We sat within the parlor. We asked perhaps 3 questions, and he said he simply had to go as quickly as possible. And he rushed out of the house in order to drive his automobile to the local pastor's house, where the pastor's wife was making a rather excellent supper. Although I don't believe it was supper he was coming for. Takes another sip.
So you did speak to the owner of the home. While speaking to the owner of the home, did you begin to notice any strange events in the home?
Well, I did notice the strangest event was, in fact, the owner. He became very nervous once we entered the home and sat within the parlor. It was very clear he did not want to stay there. And I believe he did not want to stay there originally. And honestly, I still do. I don't know. He wanted to go to the pastor's house as quickly as possible, and he would not really speak of the religious awakening that he had. That was by far the strangest thing. And then young Finn wished to start a fire, and he also wished to investigate the exterior of the house. And so he exited the house rather quickly, and he was then followed by the owner of the home.
Hmm. Always kind of surprised when an agent tells me when they ask somebody a question, that person doesn't give them a satisfactory answer, that my agent doesn't press the matter using the power of their position. But let's put that aside. So Finn left after he'd lit a fire in the fireplace?
Yes, that is correct.
Did any of the other agents leave the room after Finn did?
He's looking up and towards the right as if he's trying to remember something. And then his eyes flick left. I don't recall. The last truly memorable thing that I remember was the owner of the house leaving, and Finn had already left the room after building the fire. I sat upon a chair, and then I was in my apartments.
You remember sitting in a chair in the home, and then the next thing you remember, you are in your apartment. You remember smelling anything odd within the home?
The whole home smelled odd. It smelled of age, and not like the refined age that you would expect from perhaps an English castle, but rot. That rot that you would smell if you are in a building that you knew deep within that you should not be there.
Hmm. No other odors or smells of spices?
Well, Well, it's not like I was,
It's a simple question, Philip. Did you or did you not smell any spices in the home?
It's not like I was smelling doka or anything. I mean, where would you even be able to find that? I haven't smelled that since I was in the souks of Marrakesh. No, I don't recall smelling any doka at all.
You see him write stuff down as you're speaking.
What are you doing?
Filling out, taking notes, because I have to fill out a report once this investigation is done. I just spoke with Bruno, as you know, and he reported smelling his deceased mother's sauce. I was wondering if you also smelled anything, or was this localized to just him?
Oh, yes, of course. I must have smelled tomatoes and, what do they put in there? Garlic, perhaps, and, rosemary. I do recall distinctly smelling tomato sauce with rosemary in it, yes.
You'll write that down. Okay, so you remember Finn leaving, but you don't remember anyone else leaving, and you remember nothing else in the home?
No, I don't remember anything within the home.
Philip, this is that little voice inside your head. Are you actively trying to lie?
Of course I'm trying to lie. Wait, do you think I want to talk about this right now?
Let's see what that poker face is. Let's roll a persuade.
Are you really sure you want me to roll a persuade? I'm not the persuasive sort, but...
No, you were not, sir, but unfortunately you were not wheeling and dealing at the moment, therefore fast talk doesn't apply, and you definitely aren't being charming enough for that to apply.
I resent that implication, as accurate as it may be.
And it seems you aren't persuasive enough either.
Well, I tried.
You did.
I couldn't help it if I did smell the doka with the sense of cinnamon and turmeric. I smelled it once in the most notable time was in Marrakesh when Bertram found me after all those years.
You'll see Patterson's hands kind of reach over towards the letters and he'll slide them in front of him. Bertram.
What?
Bertram. Your friend Bertram.
Yes. Yes, what of him?
Well, you were mentioning him just now, and well, it seems you, looks down at the envelopes, have a lot to say to him.
Yes, of course. He is one of my fondest and most closest of friends. We, of course, have been separated as I've been here in the Americas, and he has been in the Middle East. And I do like to try to write him from time to time, and I also like to tell him what's going on.
When I spoke to Bruno, he says you talk about Bertram a lot. Has he been on your mind a lot lately?
Yes, I suppose. Perhaps slightly more than normal.
And what about while you were in Dunwich? Were you particularly obsessed with thoughts of Bertram, and that's why you don't remember investigating or possibly, you know, fulfilling your duties as an agent of DERP?
What are you implying, Agent Patterson? That I would let my personal life get in the way of this position which you have saddled me upon through no fault of my own?
Yes. So, answer the question.
I wouldn't call myself obsessed.
Let's see what Dr. Kruger put in his notes. I haven't had a moment to read them yet. He'll pull that folder up and open it.
You see that Philip, his knuckles turn white around the coffee mug, and his right arm at the elbow almost jerks forward like he's going to reach for the folder, but he grabs the teacup instead.
Make a dexterity roll, please. I just wanted to see if you could, you know, recover that movement to really, like, play it off or not. And apparently, no, it was a little too herky-jerky and you've spilled.
Ah, damn it. Diamond blast. And he is going to slop that cup onto the desk and he is going to immediately open his valise and go for an Irish wool napkin. One of his handkerchiefs. Pocket square.
Patterson will stand up and he'll walk around the desk and he'll sit in that chair next to you.
That was Bertram's spot. Why is he sitting there?
Patterson makes no reaction to what you've said. He'll sit down.
Of course, because I said it in my head. I said it inside. I hit it.
Philip, if you want to read Dr. Kruger's notes, you're more than welcome to. You just have to ask.
No, it's absolutely fine. I just had a no reaction to the tea. It was rather hot upon my finger, and I unfortunately made an uncharacteristic error.
An uncharacteristic error. You'll look at the folder. You can't really see. It's kind of angled it a bit. Dr. Kruger has many interesting things to tell me about your sessions. But I'd like to hear you tell me about your sessions.
The last session I attended, after our return from Innsmouth, in which all the things happened that I detailed to you in the report, I had a scheduled session with Dr. Kruger, and we discussed my fears, I wouldn't call them fears, I think they're perfectly rational actions, to take when something comes out of a painting and tries to kill you and everybody in the state of New York. But we said that we were going to face that. And there was an estate sale. And so I went and they were selling artwork and I took Dr. Kruger's advice and I didn't want to, but I could hear him say that he would be very proud of me if I was to face my fears and sit in the front row and inspect the pictures, because I used to appraise art and I was very good at it, but I stopped appraising art. But I got up and I appraised the art and it wasn't very good, and thank goodness. And I sat and I waited. I sat at the auction and there was an alabaster vase, and I believe it was from the time of Mark Antony and Cleopatra, and I haven't had time to properly date it, but I bought it, and I bought it for $6. Was it $6? I think it was $6.
And this was during your appointment with Dr. Kruger after the events at Innsmouth. You then went to this auction.
Yes.
After seeing Dr. Kruger. After Innsmouth.
Yes. Yes. I distinctly remember opening the door and stepping out of the building after the appointment, and I got on the public transit, and I was going to write in my journal, writing notes in order to tell Bertram about my, I was going to write Bertram about my sessions and how well I've been doing since New York City.
You'll see him flip through some papers in the folder, searching for something, and finds someone, pulls it out, hands it to you, and he's just staring at you.
I'm going to look at that piece of paper.
It is a doctor's report, session note. It says Dr. Kruger's name on it. It says you are the agent who is supposed to be in that appointment. And it says session notes. It has just agent failed to appear.
What's this? This can't be right.
No?
I was there.
Oh. Is checking the date. That is a date of your session after the events in Innsmouth. But, Philip, maybe I'm having one of those uncharacteristic, erroneous moments. He'll go back to the folder and he'll grab another piece of paper and hand it to you, and it looks very much the same as the first, just a different date. And then he'll pull another one out.
You, nobody's ever been certain that Philip could get any paler than he already is. But as every page enters his hands and he looks at it, and it's the same thing, agent failed to appear. Every week, except for the weeks that he was on assignment. Mm-hmm. Every week before, every week after. It has been clear that he has never attended a therapy session.
You did one. I think you went to one initial one, and then you hated Dr. Kruger, and then you left.
And that was right after New York.
Mm-hmm.
He told me it was all in my head. That the beasts had never come out of the painting, that they did not slaughter an entire house of fellow antiquarians, art critics. He told me it was impossible that a clown with a red balloon could be so frightening, and yet it was. And so was what was inside it, and he told me that eventually it would be a fading memory, but it's not. It's not, and it never was. It's still there when I close my eyes. I'd feel better when I write Bertram. And I think of what he's doing in Baghdad or Damascus. St. Petersburg, Johannesburg. I heard he's in Johannesburg this week.
Philip, if you didn't like Dr. Kruger, you could have come to me and we would have found a different doctor. But instead, you failed to go to mandated sessions.
So what if I did? Have I not performed adequately in my duties that have been assigned to me since New York?
Let's table that question.
He's sweating. It's a cold sweat, starting up at the very top of the hairline. It's starting to bead on his forehead.
Philip, Bruno tells me that when he found you, you were upstairs in the Dunwich home, in a room, catatonic. What happened in that room? A religious experience?
I don't remember.
They were very worried about you.
That does not sound...
They got you checked out?
No.
They called and let me know your state, and I was worried about you, and I thought, what could I do for Philip?
No, it's impossible.
To help him?
No.
Through his difficult time, and...
No.
I thought maybe I could bring his friend Bertram.
No, damn it.
Stateside.
No.
So I went to your desk, and he puts his hand towards the envelopes. Went to your desk, and I found all these letters to Bertram, and well, he's a traveler, so I had to do a little investigating in order to locate him.
Did you now?
Yes, I reached out to his family. What do you think they told me, Philip?
That they could not locate him? No, that isn't it, is it?
No, they haven't been able to locate him for years, Philip. The last time they heard from him, he was headed off to Egypt with, on the word of his good friend, Philip.
Yes, well, Cairo is where we parted ways 13 years ago, and he has been traveling ever since.
An argument between friends? A close friend who you write to constantly? Who you save seats for? Knowing he's not going to be walking in this room anytime soon.
Philip is going to look over his shoulder at the door at that mention. And then he's going to look at the floor. Is it carpeted? Is it bare wood? Is it sand?
Wood with a rug. A nice rug. Persian.
He's going to run his left foot along that rug and listen to see if he's going to hear any sand grinding against the heel of his shoe.
Not trying to hide any of these actions.
No, his eyes are closed. He's got a very serious look of concentration on his face. He's got sweat beading all over his forehead. He's very clearly riled up by this.
Well, so I didn't want to invade your privacy any more than I had to, so I figured since you're here now, and he'll reach across his desk and grab the first envelope, why don't I just look at the letters and maybe that'll help me figure out where he is now. And he'll open it.
The second that he does, Philip is going to snatch it out of his hands and crumple it. What would I have to roll for that? That is his intent.
You roll brawl and I'll roll dodge. You go to snatch it and he goes to dodge it and ends up just dropping it on the floor in between the two chairs.
He opens his eyes and the look on his face isn't furious. It's not. It's pure, just terror. And he grabs for this letter. And it's multiple pages as these letters are being unfolded. It's a sheaf of like 6 or 7 pages. They go everywhere as he reaches for it and they all fall to the floor. And 6 of the 7 pages are blank. And in the center of the first page, or maybe it's the last page, he didn't actually, you know, number those pages. But on one of the pages in the exact center, in Philip's very prim and proper handwriting, it says, Bertram, comma, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, period. And that's it.
Patterson is looking down at the pages as well. And you hear him calmly say, you're right, Philip. Why don't you look at that letter? I'll look at one of these other ones. Let's see if we can find Bertram. And you hear him pick up another envelope and you hear the paper rip open again.
And Philip doesn't even notice. All he can see is his handwriting on the floor.
You'll hear some paper shuffling. And then, is that repeated again in this envelope?
Every envelope will say the same thing in the same handwriting. Well, not the same handwriting.
Mm.
As they get later and later on, it gets less prim and it gets less proper. The letters get thicker. This is post-Innsmouth was the last letter. And there's a very noticeable divot in the paper where he was writing with his pen. And at the very end, there's an ink blot where the pen blade snapped. And he didn't even notice it. So that last Y is half an ink blot with a hole in the paper.
Patterson continues opening envelope after envelope after envelope. Papers are just piling up on the floor, that same sheet, over and over again. Until finally he's out of envelopes. Philip.
How long have you known?
Would I be a very smart person if I didn't at least check people out before I brought them in as agents? Or maybe you, like Bruno, think I'm an idiot.
No, Agent Patterson, I don't think you are a fool.
But as you recall, what?
As I recall, I seem to be having problems recalling many things, don't I, Agent Patterson?
So, do you want to tell me what happened to Bertram? Or do you want to tell me what happened in the house?
It was in 1910 that I telephoned Bertram, the telegraph, I suppose. The troubles hadn't yet happened in Europe, and I found a rumor of a tomb within the Valley of the Kings. I forget which pharaoh it was, but the locals were convinced that the tomb was cursed. But they say that about many of these tombs, because they do not wish archaeologists or thieves to enter them and steal all of the treasures within. My contacts in Cairo had told me about an artifact. They called it the Feather of Thoth. Now, in Egyptian mythology, Thoth was the one who created the written word. He also created judgment and presided over the judging of the dead. And it was said that he created a feather and a set of scales. And if you weighed the feather against the heart of the deeds of the departed, if the feather was lighter than their heart, then they were free from the sin of mortal life, and they would pass into the afterlife. And if it was not, then the abyss would rise up and it would swallow their soul, because they were judged and they were found wanting. And I told Bertram about this amazing archaeological find, adventures, that lovely man. And he had taken me to the souks of Marrakesh, to Baghdad, to Damascus. We'd been all over the Middle East, Iran, the Palestine. And we had found so much, and all of it had gone back to these museums, British Museum, the museums in France. And every time it was his name plastered over the exhibits. And I was always there with him. Well, this time it was going to be mine. And he was overjoyed. He was excited. So he came to Cairo. We caught in a lorry, and we drove with some excavators, some locals that I had hired. And we went to this tomb. And as I went upstairs smelling the tobacco, the doka that I had smelled in Marrakesh when I first saw him again after several years after Oxford University, I found two chairs very much like these, and I could hear him talking to me, and we were talking about Cairo. And that's when we entered the tomb. And the sarcophagi was magnificent, and it was very clear that this was a, maybe not a pharaoh, but certainly a high priest. normally that they would worship Ra, Osiris, Horus. But no, this wasn't the Eye of Horus. This wasn't that. This was the scales. On a plinth near the sarcophagi of this high priest, there was a set of scales, and on it was a feather. And those scales were weighed down, and the feather was at the bottom. I could tell it was very precious, a very precious metal. I don't think it was gold. I'd have never seen a metal that white, but it looked very valuable. And Bertram was very interested in the sarcophagi and the writings on the wall. There was the hieroglyphs, and I admit I was going to look at the hieroglyphs on the wall, but I didn't. And as I sat in that chair, I could hear him behind me, and I could feel the sand filling the floor around my feet. And I remember stepping forward while he was distracted with the sarcophagus, and I saw the feather. I could tell it was the feather of Thoth, because that is what my contacts had told me, and they had also told me, as certainly you're aware with your wiles and your investigations and your mantle of the United States government, that if I was to bring the feather to my contacts, I would be well compensated to ease my debts to rather unsavory characters across the Middle East. I remember him looking at me, Agent Patterson. I could see it in his eyes. Don't do it. I left him in that tomb, Agent Patterson. I ran out of the burial room with the feather in my possession. The stone started to close shut. I made it through. I don't know why he didn't. He was closer than I was. He should have been able to. Perhaps he was dumbstruck by my cross betrayal. And I left him there. The seneschal of the mansion with the paintings was the second man I killed. Agent Patterson, is that what you want to hear? And when I sat in that room upstairs in Dunwich, he came back, mummified. His fingers were gone. I could see them worn away on the stone inside. I saw that damned feather again. On its plinth, on the scales. And Finn came in that room somehow. He opened the door. He opened that damned door. And I saw my chance. But Finn was in the way. I tried to push him away. And then he swung at me, and I felt the air part like it swung a knife at me. And then he ran, and he left me there. And Bertram got his revenge, didn't he? And Philip will rub his hand on his chest, right over his heart. Yes. Yes, he pushed me up against the wall. I begged him not to, even though I knew he had every reason to, and so he did. Agent Patterson, he took my heart from my chest, and he weighed it against the feather. And my heart was heavier than the feather of Thoth, and I was swallowed by the abyss. And then I woke up in my apartments, and now two people in the hospital. Agent Patterson, I found that out this morning. And that is what happened in Cairo, and that is what happened in Dunwich, because they are one and the same thing.
He's going to stand up, walk back around the desk, sit in the chair, grab a pen and paper. Finn attacked you.
Yes. He held his hand, not like a fist, not like punching, but he held it as if he had, like he was swinging a sword. And I could feel the air part, but it I don't know. I was being chased by Bertram at the time. He was a mummy. He had been desiccated, dried away. I thought he'd tried to kill himself, but I believe he starved to death in that chamber. There was plenty of air, but there was no water, no food. It had been too long since the barrier urns had been opened.
Patterson will nod. Not so much smile, but maybe like half smile.
It's like a grimace.
Yeah. Philip, I want you to start seeing a doctor. If you do not want to see Dr. Kruger, we will find another doctor. But do you need to work through this guilt you have.
He takes his glasses and he puts them back on. Yes, Agent Patterson, I do understand. I will endeavor to find a doctor as soon as possible and see them.
I will find you a doctor and I will make the appointment and let you know when it is. But unlike the team, your team, I called the homeowner and I questioned him further about the so-called religious experience he had. It seems the house amplified through various, we're not quite sure how, but people either hear things, smell things, see things. But the things are deep-seated fears, guilt. And when faced with that, you either overcome it and have the religious experience, like the homeowner states, or you, point to you, succumb to it and get in a mental state to where catatonic. Had you stayed in the house longer, had your team not gone back in and gotten you, not quite sure where you would be at now mentally or what would have happened. So, with that in mind, and I'm going to wait and see what the other three have to say, but right now, looks like destroying the house was probably, maybe, the best course of action. But I think your experience in the house is just this guilt you hold about an accident that happened years ago.
Was it though?
Philip, you're many things. You're a liar. You're a confidence man. You're a thief. I don't think you're a cold-blooded murderer.
No, I suppose not, but people have a habit of ending up murdered around me, don't they?
You've been working with the same agents for a few years now. They're all alive.
Mr. Ford isn't. And I can't help but feel we had something to do with that because we questioned him.
Thad, he's going to get a very serious kind of stern look. Yes, Mr. Ford, the events at Innsmouth, they are concerning. Along with this instance with Finn attacking both you and Bruno, what? Agent Miller attacking Agent Clark.
What do you mean that he attacked Bruno?
I guess they didn't fill in all the gaps for you.
Philip leans forward in his chair. The first time I saw Bruno was this morning before you came in. I haven't seen Finn yet. What do you mean that...
Finn's in the hospital having been shot. Sam's in the hospital having been stabbed. Finn by Bruno. Sam by Cookie.
What?
And Bruno is reporting similar events occurring between him and Finn as what happened between you and Finn now.
What do you mean? Like he swung a fist at Bruno like he was holding a sword?
No. He cut Bruno, but with no weapon in hand.
Philip has nothing to say to that, but he reaches up and he takes his glasses back off. And he keeps them clenched in his right hand. Agent Patterson, that can't be a coincidence.
Why do you say that, Philip?
I have no evidence of this, of course, you understand.
Mm-hmm.
But as I outlined in my report, we spoke to Mr. Ford. We returned to the inn, we had dinner. Finn had gone out for a walk and returned. And later that evening is when I found Mr. Ford dead. He looked like he'd been stabbed, but there was no weapon left behind.
Sometimes murderers don't leave their weapons behind.
Well, yes, but why leave a shirt and not a weapon? Why not take the shirt as well? If... if I were to kill someone, more than I already have, if I were to kill someone and I had a knife with me, I would want to wrap it in something because it is soaked in blood. And there was a bloody shirt there. Why not take that? Agent Patterson, perhaps you are right. I'm seeing things that aren't there. I'm hearing people that aren't here. I can still hear Bertram asking me when I'm going to come to London to see him and his family again. And I always put it off because I was working. Or so I thought. But I'm not even sure I heard of those phone calls.
Philip, you're going to start seeing a doctor. We're going to take care of that problem for you. And in turn, you're going to help us. I want you to start watching all the other team members, and I want you to start telling me if you see any weird behavior.
Weirder than we already are, Agent Patterson.
Anything that can confirm your theories to date.
I will certainly keep an eye out. I know the events at Dunwich were apparently unique for everyone. Perhaps that's why Miss Charlotte called me a stupid Brit when she was asking me how many people I had killed and what details I remembered.
He's going to look very interested at that and write that down.
Of course, I told her I couldn't remember anything aside from... No, I'd remember the tobacco. And that's when I remembered... She don't seem terribly interested, but any details that I could remember about the home were useful to her. She was rather insistent about it.
Like I said, Philip, just keep an eye. Instead of writing letters to Bertram, start writing letters to me. I want you to report on any weird anything that happens.
Yes, strangeness that would have appear outside of the normal reports of our duties.
If something happens and someone's trying to keep it a secret, you're going to have to be the one to tell.
Yes, Agent Patterson, of course. As always, I will endeavor to apply myself to the very best possibilities for the sake of the Department of Esoteric Relics and Parchment.
He's going to stand up. He's going to smile. A genuine smile. Walk over. Hand on your shoulder. Pat on the back. You're going to be fine, Philip.
Yes, of course. Thank you, Agent Patterson. I do appreciate your concern.
Don't worry. I'm going to get you the best doctor. And before long, you won't be hearing anything from Bertram anymore.
Yes, of course.
Why don't you take the rest of the day off? Again, please don't discuss what transpired here between you and I with the other members of the team. And I won't tell them anything either.
He still doesn't have his glasses on, so he will look up at Agent Patterson. And he will offer a wan smile, because he's not really the smiling type, being British. Yes, of course, Agent Patterson, and thank you for your candor and your confidentiality. I have everything I need right here, and he will pat his valise. If you do not mind, I think I will exit directly without returning to the office.
Sure thing, Philip. Just relax, okay? Just go home. And relax, all right?
Yes. He'll stand up. He's got his valise in his bag, and he looks towards the door, and he's been very tense. And for a moment, he just kind of, you know, works his shoulders, and he loosens himself up a bit, and he stands up a bit straight, and he says, Yes, I think I'll go home and open a good book. He'll put his glasses on. And maybe with a little bit of a jaunty air, he walks out of the office. Oz here, just chiming in at the end to say thanks for continuing to support us with your ears, bumping us by word of mouth, and even with Patreon donations, which is pretty awesome. If you aren't on our Discord, feel free to come on by and get a Without a Net welcome. If you are, you know how we do. We couldn't continue to do this without your support and feedback, so if you do have feedback, this is me personally begging you to let us know. We know we can always do better, and we love to know when we're doing well. Anyway, a couple of disclaimers. The music you heard in the intro and the outro is from the Great Old Ones and Other Beings album by Graham Plowman. You can find that on YouTube. It is some excellent Call of Cthulhu music. Call of Cthulhu 7th Edition is produced by Chaosium Inc. Without a Net podcast has no affiliation with Chaosium Inc. We just think 7th Edition is pretty bomb and we're going to go ahead and try it out. We get no kickbacks from Chaosium, nor do we expect any, although that may change in the future, but probably not. I hope you all had a wonderful time listening to this, and we will see you next week.